We're live. Anybody there? One person. So weird. Better put the iPad. Hi, Chris. Let's see if anyone else turns up. How you doing, Chris? All right. Good to see you on here. Hope you're keeping nice and warm. It's bloody freezing out there, isn't it? I'm just going to open up with a song while we're waiting for people to come in, aren't I? Try not to let you go, but it's more than I can do. And every day or two, I wind up right back where I started. I'm trying not to let you know, but I'm still in love with you. I just can't sit home blue, 'cause there ain't no rest for the broken hearted. Just because you won't unlock your door, that don't mean you don't love me anymore. I'm never gonna let you go, no matter what you do, because you know it's more than I can do. Told me that I've got to stop, but it's more than I can do. And that ain't nothing new, 'cause we both know I am crazy about you. You said you're gonna call the cops, but I ain't gonna run, because you're the only one. And there ain't no way I could live without you, just because you needed me more than you. I ain't even close to through with you. I'm never gonna let you go, no matter what you do, because you know it's more than I can do. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. That's a bit of Steve-O. Steve-O opening up the show. I hope you've all got a drink. I'm going to get mine cracked open. Tonight we have Nanny State, one of my favourites. I haven't had this for a little while. So, yeah. It's bloody freezing out there. It really is. I went for a really nice long walk earlier. And up to my favourite cafe through the woods. It was marvellous. And on the way there, I had the headphones on, playing some music. I usually don't play music at all. I just like to listen to the nature around me. But this time I thought I'll stick an album on. And I put on Broadsword and the Beast by Jethro Tull, which I haven't heard for ages. But that's a fantastic album to have on while you're walking through the woods, because obviously Jethro Tull got that kind of woodland vibe. So yeah, that was really nice. Cheers. It did make me realise, when you're listening to music on the headphones on a walk, I mean, my whole life, ever since I think I had my first Walkman, really, you know, walking and listening to a fantastic album as a backdrop to what's going on in your day is just the best thing ever. It's like playing it in the car, you know, and I've always wanted my music to have the same experience for people, you know. And I think an album really, really gives that, you know. A full album of a band can give you the full immersive experience, you know, and carry you on through whatever journey you're on, whether in your car or you're travelling on a train or whatever. And I've always wanted my music to do that. And I think the album sometimes does sort of, as a concept in this modern age, I know a lot of kids just have playlists with the odd track here and there on, you know. It's just like a bunch of singles the whole time. So, yeah, I mean, our generation is essentially from the album generation. And I really hope that that some of you do listen to our music in that capacity, and that you do enjoy the full album. And I hope you can check it out on all the streaming sites if you haven't owned a copy already. Tonight is free to view. At the moment, I haven't been. It's not a nag or anything, but I haven't been receiving that many tips from people. The people who I have tipped really, really appreciate it. Don't get me wrong, it's fantastic. But I don't know. I've been thinking, should I charge for this every week? You know, I don't really want to get to that stage, but it does take up a bit of my time, as much as I enjoy it. I don't really want to get to the stage where I'm having to charge, you know, for people to buy tickets for this. So feel free to chuck in just a couple of quid into the tip jar. It really does help. This is original music, most of it. It's an original music show, and as you know, most original musicians just don't get paid hardly anything for what they do. So anything you can give would be really appreciated. Even just a couple of quid. Every person who tips, don't forget, you get a full bootleg of the Cambridge Blue Moon show of Stevie J and the Wildfires. It's got two or three unreleased songs on it, and I will email you that, and it's not going to be anywhere else. So you'll get that, and you'll get a discount code for the store if you want to buy anything else. Anyway, right, where do we get up to? What am I going to talk tonight? I'm going to talk tonight about how I met Mark Gill, really. The last stream I was sort of talking about, I just found out that I was going to be a dad, basically, in early 2000. And that was a massive life change for me, just to suddenly discover that. It was a very tumultuous time at the end of the, you know, around then for me, because I was in this relationship with my daughter's mum, Eleanor's mum, Emma, and it was kind of on and off at the time. And when I found out I was going to be a dad, it was definitely on. And went through the whole learning about pregnancy, and we went to NCT classes, and we got everything ready, and I was just completely focused. I mean, all of the year 2000 is pretty much a blur. I was just preparing for parenthood, really, and I changed jobs. I was teaching at a pupil referral unit for kids who'd been excluded in Kettering, and I dropped out of that to go back into archaeology after a few years out of it, went back and worked for University of Leicester again, which was a really good move for me. Because it was less stressful than working with really difficult teenagers all day, and it was really good to be back outside doing my other passion aside from music, you know, going back into archaeology at that point. And they were absolutely brilliant to me, University of Leicester. They really were. It was a fantastic move. So I started supervising sites, working on various sites around the East Midlands for them. And I will do an archaeology special at some point, highlighting a lot of the sites that I dug over the years. So I won't go into too much detail about the archaeology I was doing. But the whole of the year really was a blur, like I say, just getting prepared for sort of parenthood. I don't remember playing too much music, really, in that year. I also started a MA, doing archaeology by distance learning.
So that involves quite a few hours study as well, and took up quite a lot of my weekend doing that. And I don't really remember writing very much or going out gigging much in the year 2000 because, I was just getting ready to be a dad. But I do remember writing this one. Pretty certain I wrote this in the year 2000. And it's a song that me and Mark used to do quite a lot. And it ended up being on the first album. Wildfire, the song Wildfire. I haven't played that in a while. Yeah. Many a version has been done with that, with Mark and with the early early lineups of the Wildfires, and that's actually where the name came from for the Wildfires. In fact, Wildfire Sessions was first, and then Stevie Jones and the Wildfires are all linked in kind of with that song. I just thought it was a good way of titling things, really, and it all stemmed from that song. And it's funny, really, playing that back again lyrically, like I was saying last week. I kind of realised where some of the where I was going with it. A lot of the stuff that I write, it comes to the subconscious, and then later on, I realised what I was actually writing about at the time, and that really, I think, was about holding on to the relationship, really, and another one, and maybe a bit of hope that everything was going to be all right. In that department, you know, but yeah, it was a very exciting time in the build up to becoming a dad. Stressful, you know, because we had to get everything ready, and I was doing my MA, and I was working, and I think I was doing the odd gig actually with Tommy Hall, but not that many. Eleanor was born in November of 2000, and I really remember it distinctly because I was on site at a site on a big Iron Age and Neolithic site in Husbands Bosworth, and we were working on that for a couple of years doing excavations of it, and I always remember getting the phone call on my mobile that Emma was dilating, and I was summoned to go off, and the fact that it was at Husbands Bosworth, I think that's another reason why I chucked that into the lyric on Stratigraphic Heart as well, because that site meant an awful lot to me in many different ways, because that was the moment where I found out that Eleanor was going to come into the world. So when you hear that lyric on the song Stratigraphic Heart, look out for it. Husbands Bosworth, that's where I was when I found out that Eleanor was coming into the world. So, rushed off to hospital. And then, that was on the Friday afternoon, I think. And then she wasn't born until the Tuesday morning. She was very, very slow to get out. Very, very long labour indeed. And it was amazing that Emma didn't have to have a caesarean. Tried the water birth, but Eleanor wasn't coming out at all. She was taking her bloody time. So I think it was about 72-hour labour or something like that. But it was amazing when she was born. And I remember that evening when I went back home. I think Emma spent another night in hospital. But I went back home, and me and Emma's dad, we went down to the village club. At the time, we were in Geddington, and we went down to the Working Men's Club, which at the time had changed its name to Burwell's, and we went there. And there was the blues jam going on with Mick and Paddy and Jim Hale and all the local characters who were running it. And my good friend, the late, great Mr. Al Tate, actually that all kind of rhymes, strangely enough, but Al was a lovely, lovely guy. And he was on the mic when I walked in, and someone had told him that I'd just become a dad, and he announced it. And I will never forget that, you know. It was such a great moment to walk in, and then Al saying congratulations to Stevie for becoming a dad, and amazing. I was just a blur, you know. As many of you will know, when you've got a young baby, you spend the whole time focused on it. You don't get any sleep, you know. When you're working and just trying to changing nappies and trying to work out what the bloody hell to do if it's your first one. So yeah, not a great time for music. And I remember I was sitting by the bedside actually reading books for my archaeology MA while she was waiting really to get further dilated, and massaging a bit of her back, and then reading a bit more of this archaeology book. But with the archaeology MA, it's a shame, really. I never finished it because, yeah, to sort of fast forward really another 6 months, we tried to make a go of it. And I just reached a crossroads where I you know, we'd already split up a couple of times before she got pregnant, and I just knew in my heart that it wasn't going to last, you know. And so we did split up. It was horrific. It was the most difficult decision of my entire life. That following summer. But it's something that I felt that I had to do then, rather than leave it till later on in my daughter's life. I thought, now if I was going to do it, I wanted to do it then. But you know, didn't want to do it when she was a toddler or a teenager or anything like that. And I just knew in my heart it would be for the best, and it has worked out for the best, because I've got a great relationship with Eleanor's mum. We're still great friends. We're still great parents. But at that time, that first whole year when I did leave, it was very difficult, and a very difficult time indeed. Around that time, I remember going to a party in Rushton Hall, which is where the Festival Sundays I was involved in a few years before was held. And my friend Joe O'Malley, local Leicestershire singer-songwriter, who some of you might know, she was living in the gatehouse there, and she had a party one night and invited me over. And there's various people who I knew there. And there's a guy there, a guitarist, who I'd seen at the open mics in the area a few times. And I started chatting to him. We just got on really well. We both had exactly the same taste in music. And I said, oh, I really like watching you play at the open mics and stuff and that. And basically, as the night went on, we sat around the fire and we had a jam. And that was Mark Gill. And he reminded me the other night, because I had a gig with him. The other night, it was a great gig, Black Pistons Motorcycle Club near Leicester on Friday night. We had a great gig. I hadn't seen Mark. We went gig together for a long time. It was really good. But he actually reminded me that the first song that we really jammed on was Don't Want to Talk About It, which I'm going to play for you now. Can you turn the guitar up? Hi, Carlene. Don't Want to Talk About It. Obviously, everyone knows it for the Rod Stewart hit or the Everything But the Girl hit. But it's actually written by a guy called Danny Whitten, who was a member of Neil Young's Crazy Horse. He was the guitarist, and he actually passed away in the mid-70s. And it's such a beautiful song, you know. And I always remember seeing Ian McNabb do it. As well, obviously, Ian McNabb's got the Neil Young Crazy Horse connection. So yeah, don't want to talk about it. Probably been crying forever, and the stars in the sky don't mean nothing to you, dear mirror. I don't wanna talk about it, how you broke. Stay here just a little bit longer. If I stay here, won't you listen to my heart? Oh, my heart. If I stand all alone, will these shadows cut the colors of my heart? For the tears, like for the stars in the sky, don't mean nothing to you.
if I stay here just a little bit longer, if I stay here, won't you listen to my heart?
Cheers. Don't want to talk about it. Written by Danny Whitten. Still a great song to play live. It's just one of those songs you play near the end of the set and everyone sings along, you know. Beautiful song. So, yeah, me and Mark, we're sitting at Joe's party having a jam along with that. And we jammed some Neil Young and stuff like that. And, yeah, it was we kind of bonded, I think, that night. And then sort of later on, I was still doing a lot of gigs with Tommy Hall, but his availability changed a little bit. He wasn't quite up for it. He started to cancel a few gigs. I can't remember what he was doing. I think he was working away quite a lot because he's an electrician as well. So was able to offer Mark the odd gig. And I think our first gig was probably in around 2001. It would have been at Hogan's Bar in Leicester, I think. Either that or the new inn in Ringstead. Mark, if you're online, do let us know. Was it the new inn at Ringstead, which is now the Axe and Compass, or was it at Hogan's? I think it was Hogan's. Anyway, yeah, it was great to have Mark step in, and he became, we were still called Treehouse then. And yeah, and he fitted really well into the set. And the thing that did change, it was the first time that I think, although Harkin did the odd bit of backing vocal, but not that much. But it was the first time really that I had no backing singing at all, because Mark doesn't sing, he's just a guitarist, and a fantastic guitarist he is too. So I had to cover that ground. So it was interesting for me working with Mark, because I had to cover a lot more ground vocally, and I think it helps. I think it really helped me. Mark, Thrapston. Well, Thrapston. It wasn't Thrapston. That was Ringstead, mate. I think you're thinking the new inn in Ringstead, which is now called the Axe and Compass, I believe. But yeah. Oh, that was the night. That I remember that now. That was the night. There was two absolutely mullered women sitting right at the front. And one of them said to me, "Oh, you look just like Bryan Adams." And that became their thing. And they got so pissed that at the end of the night, they asked for my autograph, but I had to sign as Bryan Adams on a beer mat for them. I remember that. Strange gig. Yeah, so yeah, Mark fitted really well into the set. Yeah, around that time as well, I started going out with, I had a new partner, Vicky. And she had a flat in Leicester. I bought a house in Rothwell, so I was spending half the time in Rothwell, and then the other half of the time kind of up in Leicester at that point. She eventually moved down with me. But it was quite handy when she had a flat in Leicester because it was easy for me for work, and it was great for going out as well. I was really enjoying being able to go out a lot more. It was very hard as well trying to share being a dad and being a new relationship and all that kind of stuff. It was I kind of pulled in two different directions with commitments and everything. I'm going to play you a song that I wrote. No, it was in Egypt. Fucking hell. Top of the pyramid, eh, mate? Don't remember that one. Right. This is a song that I wrote. I remember writing it, spending a lot of time in Vicky's flat writing this, when I was missing Eleanor, and just thinking about what it was like to be a dad and miss your child, really. And I wrote this. It's called Hush Now, Baby.
It is cold this January, on a road to recovery. Motorway stretches on forever. It is quiet in your room, lit up by a winter moon. It won't be long till we are together. Cause I can hear the heartbeats no matter where you are. You're a star that shines for me, and I'll be with you all the way. It's gonna be alright. I'm the howling still, the sun around these frozen hills, as the sleet falls upon the village. And in a city that never sleeps, I wander along through empty streets, and all the time you are all with me. Cause I can hear your heartbeat no matter where you are. You're a star that shines for me, and I'll be with you all the way. It's gonna be alright. Gonna be alright. Hush now, baby, don't you cry. Hush now, baby, don't you cry.
Hush Now, Baby. Yeah. That was the first song, I think, that I wrote after Ellen was born, I think. Right, yeah. And around that time, me and Mark also started jamming along with Pete McAlinden. We were doing a few gigs with him and the bass player who we met at one of the open mics. There's a good open mic in Rothwell at the Old Greyhound, which is where our friend John, our friends John Hill and Natasha at the time, when they were together, they ran, and it was a really good music venue. Had a lot of good bands on. We used to go down there. We met a guy called Tim Harrison, who ended up being our bass player. And Treehouse became a band, and we did do a few gigs under that name. And we had like probably, I don't know, half a dozen originals, and then the rest of it was covers. And we played some of the pubs in Kettering. The first gig that we did, I think, called Treehouse, was a bit of an absolute disaster. We hired a sound guy whose name I won't mention because he was a lovely guy, but he was just cutting his teeth as well. Actually, it was his first sort of biggish gig, I think. I can't remember. He hadn't done that much, but he had all the gear, but didn't really know how to set it up at the time. And by the time he faffed around with enough kit to put on Pink Floyd, it was like about 10:15 or something, and we were so behind, and the sound was just awful. But we kind of soldiered through, and it's such a shame because we had so many people there because it was our first gig. We'd really hyped it up, and we had a great crowd, and yet they were watching this. God knows what it was, you know what I mean? It was just feedback all over the place. But yeah, a shame really. But there's some pictures actually on, if you go onto my website section, The Vault, I think you'll see a picture from that gig, because the Wayfarer is in Kettering. I think it's in the Stevie Jones and Mark Gill section of The Vault. And you'll see a picture of the four of us there at Wayfarers at that gig. It looked great, but bloody hell, that sound was abysmal. What else happened? What else did we do at that time? Yeah, we kind of were like a band. Ireland, yes. I did go back to Ireland. Me and Vicky went over to Ireland to go and see my friend Russ, who was then living in Kilkenny. And I did a couple of gigs there, and we had a great time over there, and went to see his band, who were called Reverie Play, and they just supported Damien Rice. Damien Rice was just getting big, and they'd had a really good gig supporting Damien Rice in quite a small bar, and they're going on about, oh, you got to hear this guy, Damien Rice, he's going to be huge. And Russ gave me a burnt copy of The Story of O. I mean, this is years before Damien Rice was a thing, and I remember being very impressed by it. And he also was, when we were driving around with him, he was blaring out Damien Dempsey's first album in his car, and I was like, yeah, well, I've played alongside Damien in Dublin a few years before, and it's good to see him doing well. And he was becoming quite a name in Ireland. That was a good trip. And then we gave Reverie a couple of gigs back in the UK. We played The Musician with them, and we played a couple of other gigs, I think, in Wilby and Rothwell, I think. And the other two gigs weren't that good, but I think The Musician gig was good for them. But it was always great seeing them over, and, you know, and Russ, always good to see Russ, because I knew Russ obviously back from the Germany days, and great to see him in a band. And their band was good. They did release one album. And in fact, while we were over there, they were at quite a big festival. I think the Kilkenny Festival of Music and Arts or something. And it was in this big grounds, this big country house. And Hottest Flowers were headlining, and Rodrigo and Gabriella were on the bill as well. And that's just as they were making it big. And to see them in quite a small event at that time was amazing. It was really good. I also went back to Germany to go and see James and Diane over there, and I don't really remember too much about the trip. I think it was just going over there for a few days to catch up with them. But because they were out gigging the whole time, they became very nocturnal whenever I went to go and see them. So they wouldn't get out of bed until the afternoon, do you know what I mean? So I just remember when every time I went to go and visit them, I'd be getting up in the morning and like, well, what the fuck do I do? You know, go for a walk. Because they lived in the middle of bloody nowhere. But I had plenty of time to write songs. And I do remember picking up the guitar one day. And this would have probably been about, when would it have been? About 2003, maybe. And writing Chasing Rainbows. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to play you the full band version of Chasing Rainbows recorded at the Blue Moon in October. Because that song, it was written around this time. So it was written about 2003, and me and Mark jammed it a lot, and it became a kind of acoustic track on the first album, and then it became a track on Stratigraphic Heart, and it's still in the set. So I'm going to find it for you. Where would it? Bear with me. Just look on the in the folders. Where is it? Dropbox. Yeah, this is Chasing Rainbows, recorded at the Blue Moon on the 1st of October this year with the Wildfires. He says.
Take a foot out across the river. Take up There you go, Chasing Rainbows. Recorded live at the Blue Moon, Cambridge. Drop a tip into the tip jar or buy something from the store and you'll get the whole of that show. Don't over as a download. It's not going to be available anywhere else. And you can have that exclusively because it's a great show, 13 tracks. And yeah, we're on fire that night and great crowd. And I say, Chasing Rainbows, I wrote that 2003 and it's still in the set. And I wrote it really about, the song's really about a time, again, like, I had that idea brewing under for quite a few years. I remember walking around Leicester City Centre at a time, and it's a beautiful summer's day, and I don't know, I just felt like falling in love, like so many beautiful girls around everywhere, and just beautiful people everywhere, and just this summer haze, you know what I mean? And it was almost like having too much sugar in your tea, really. It was kind of a bit like that, really. But I was also thinking about someone else who I hadn't seen in a long time as well. It was loads of stuff, just that kind of summer feeling, really. That's what I wanted to try and purvey in that song. And yeah, still on the set, so there you go. Right, where do we get up to? Yeah, so Treehouse by then was a kind of four-piece. We also had Titch Van Gogh on board as well. He was my old friend Titch from the Kettering days, who I shared a house with in Kettering, was kind of back on the scene, and he was playing piano with us. So we were doing a few gigs with him as well, which is quite good. Kind of as a full band, or me, Mark, and Titch, with Titch joining us on a few songs. So that was good. And we played at Gedstock in Geddington, various other gigs here and there, which none of which I can all remember. You know, I've got diaries somewhere with a few of them, probably. Decided to write songs for an album. That was the main aim, really. We decided as well, I think it would have been 2004, to go into Far Heath Studios, which was recommended to us by lots of people. It's a wonderful studio. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere, in Northamptonshire. I couldn't even tell you where it is now. It's a remote studio that overlooks a lake. It's got like horses out the back. This guy Angus Wallace has been running it for years. He's still there doing it, and he's had a lot of very good acts there. Fred Fjortland, I'm sure you've heard of Far Heath Studios. I think you've probably worked with some of the acts that have been in there. So we booked that, and it was going to be me, Mark, Pete, and Tim on bass, and we had some rehearsals. But we needed a couple more rehearsals just to get up to speed for the recording. And Tim and Pete pulled out. It's the Champions League. Oh, no, we're not going to come to rehearsal tonight. It's Champions League. And basically, I just lost my shit. I was like, well, forget it then. If you can't be asked to go to the last rehearsals before we go into the studio because you want to watch a game of football, I'm sorry. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't even the bloody final. I know Pete was a big Man United fan, but it was just the point where I just thought, no. I said to Mark, I said, should we do it as a duo? And he said, yeah. So me and Mark decided to do it as a duo. And we had a gig that lunchtime, a really bizarre gig, at the lunchtime gig at the Attenborough Centre at Leicester University. And it was just, I don't know, it was just really strange. People were there, very, very strange. And Mark wasn't in the best of form at that point. I said to you before that both me and him suffer from anxiety. And at that point, he was having some quite bad panic attacks. And it was when he first started having them, really. And basically, he had a huge panic attack that afternoon. And it really looked like I was going to have to take him home. But he actually pulled it through and managed to get into the studio. And we did two sessions, I think. I don't know if we recorded it both. We certainly recorded the first one. The second one might have just been mixing. But we recorded four tracks anyway. And I might play a couple of tracks next week. I'm not going to play one now. But yeah. Vocally, I don't know. Perhaps didn't put it off as much as I like. I think it was how many, 4 or 5 tracks. But anyway, yes, some of it wasn't too bad. It was a good start anyway. In fact, the acoustic version of Chasing Rainbows that we recorded at Fairheath, we then used later on the first album. So it wasn't all bad. But anyway, was writing songs around that time with an album in mind. And this is one of the songs that I wrote, which then became the title track. And again, looking back, really, this is looking back on my time at Germany, which had loads of ups and downs. And this is kind of about more of the sort of darker times of being in Germany. And I think also the song also summed up how I was feeling, really, because the song's called New Life. And it was really about lots of new beginnings I had at that time. And maybe the Germany experience, that was a new life in one aspect. But it's kind of like how sometimes when you do have a new start, and things don't quite go as well as you'd, I don't know, as to plan, as it were. Anyway, ups and downs of a fresh start in life, I guess. This is what this song's about. So you wanted to start out again and fly into the sun. Find a new life and start over again. Goodbye, everyone. All of your friends, they just let you down. You don't want to lose faith. Too late to go back to your hometown. You don't want to lose faith. I never thought that this would be easy. I never thought that this would be so hard. Down by the river bank on your own, watching the barges pass by. All of your chances, they just turned to stone under a cord grindland sky. So buy me a beer and a bottle of hope. We'll make the best of the time. Drink to the faith that seizes the day. Drink to the sweet taste of wine. And I never thought that this would be easy. Top of the hill, I need to see further right now. We'll be right back. yeah, the song New Life. Let's say I wrote that around sort of 2003-ish, really, but it was looking back on my time in the early 90s of living in Germany. But it was also, yeah, like I say, it was just, I think there was a lot of fresh starts in my life, and they weren't all going great as well in 2003. Certainly my relationship with my new partner, Vicky, wasn't 100%. It was great to begin with, but then when she started living with me, the cracks started to appear, really. I wasn't ready for living with somebody, really. And she was very pushy and moving in, and you just think, oh, sod it. What could go wrong? It'll go wrong. So what? But yeah, it was the mothership, and I won't go into that this week, really. That's for next week or whenever I cover it. But yeah, the cracks were starting to show, and what happened is I kind of threw myself into the music, and I think part of that is what New Life is about. It's about my coping mechanism quite often is to throw myself into music, sing your heart out tonight, you know, because music's always been there, and it's always been like the rock. When everything else has been going to shit, music's always been there for me. And certainly in 2003, when you know, I just really just threw myself into making the first album. It was me and Mark with a core, and by then we had another drummer on board called Paul Degallier, who was knocking around at the time. He played with a lot of different groups, did a lot of work with Kevin Buxton. And so we had Paul on drums, Tim Harrison on bass, and then Mark doing the guitars, and then me. And we found a studio in Northampton called Hot Rock, which had been recommended to me. It's a little tiny studio. There's two guys running it, Ollie and Dom, and they were a great little team. It was going great, and we started to go in there and put down the tracks. I just started off, it was a weird way of doing it, actually, looking back. I think I just put down the click track and the acoustic, rather than putting down the drums and the bass first. But, you know, it was my first experience of kind of doing a full band, so I didn't really know how to approach it. But the team, Dom and Ollie, was actually really good. But unfortunately, not only was my relationship breaking up, but Dom and Ollie's partnership, business partnership, broke up. We turned up one week, and Dom had left the setup, so we were just left in Ollie's hands. And at the time, Ollie wasn't in a good place. We'd turn up to the studio, he'd be late, he'd be stoned, he'd be stoned in the studio. It was just awful, and it was really hard. But as my relationship was breaking down, trying to go to the studio, working with a guy who was just kind of like trying to hold on to the ship himself, it's a fucking nightmare. It's a shame, really, because the initial work with Dom with that first album was really good. I mean, the track The Field, there's some really good stuff on there. And vocally, he was getting the best out of me. But when he went, Ollie had some great ideas, but like I say, we were going in there and getting the sessions done, but it wasn't ideal. But it was kind of, we'd kind of reached a point of no return, in that we had to carry on with this album, and I was pouring quite a lot of money into it as well. And it was like my sanctuary away from the rest of the shit that was going on at home, you know. I'm going to play you a track from the New Life album, and see what you think. This is a track that we used to jam quite a lot with Pete and Tim in the early formations of the sort of full band lineup. Didn't get it to play. This is called You Are My Release. people you should know. So come on, live the moment. Yeah, yeah. Open up, you gotta get into the flow. The debut album New Life, which isn't available. Well, you can listen to it sneakily on the Vault section of my website, but I haven't put it on Bandcamp or anywhere yet. I might do a kind of re-release of it and get some CDs made up of it. But yeah, basically, we've kind of like got sort of quite into the album and my life was kind of falling apart, really. Me and Mark Gill, we did a really good gig at The Musician supporting Nick Harper, and that was around that time. And yeah, it was our first sort of really big gig at The Musician, and great to support Nick. And when we were there, we were chatting to Ian, the promoter, and he really liked us, and we were, I was telling him about the album, and we decided to put on the album launch at Musician when we finished it. So that was kind of lined up. At the Nick Harper gig, sitting backstage, we were backstage with a girl called Hayley Hutchinson, who was who we later met when we did a gig up in York. Supporting Chris Helm, and her dad was backstage, and little did I know at the time, but that was Hutch Hutchinson. I think it was his name David, his first name, but yeah. And he was in a band called Feathers with David Bowie in the just before David Bowie did Space Oddity. Hutch Hutchinson actually penned quite a few of the early David Bowie songs. And you can hear the demos with Bowie and Hutch on Bowie's website. We were backstage at that time with this guy sitting backstage and didn't even speak to him, didn't know who he was until later on. I would love to have spoken with Hutch at that time. Sadly, he passed away, I think, last year. Very sad news to hear that. But yeah, me and Mark were sitting backstage with Hayley and her dad, Hutch Hutchinson, a musician. And it was at that gig where we talked to Ian and said, well, when we finish the album, can we then, you know, can we use this as a place for the album launch? And we managed to line it up, but I still had to finish the album off. And that's another story for next week. I'm going to finish off tonight with one more song for you. So if I can find the words. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, as normal. bloody cold out there. So what a better way than to sit in and watch me talk a load of rubbish and play some songs for you. Good health to you all. This song was an artist that me and Mark were getting into at the time. A friend of mine who I was working with at University of Leicester used to give me quite John Thomas, lovely guy. He's the deputy of the Archaeology Service now, he's a massive music fan, and we bonded over music. And he said, "You really like this guy called Ryan Adams," and he's the guy who got me into Ryan Adams. So at that time, me and Mark were really into Ryan Adams, and we used to play this song quite a lot at open mics. So a bit of Ryan Adams for you. Well, nighttime letter through, darkened, you wanna see her. Precious little thing, with eyes that dance around without their clothes. So buy a pretty dress, wear it out tonight. Anyone you think could outdo me. Better still, be my winding wheels. 'Cause I feel just like a map, without a single place to go of interest. If I could shut my mouth, she'd probably like this. So buy a pretty dress, wear it out tonight, for all the boys who think it out to me. Adams, really big influence on me and Mark at the time. And yeah, I haven't really gone down the route of talking about all of our drunken adventures yet, really, Mark. I think as the wheels came off the bus more around that time, certainly after the first album came out, it was the start. The start of the rock and roll years. But we were very lucky, really, with that first gig. I should go back to the musician gig with Nick Harper. It was such a great gig. And it was a really good start for us to show, really, what we could do on the right stage. And Ian gave us such a great platform. And, that first gig. And I'm still doing gigs regularly at the musician now. We're there with the Wildfires on the 28th of January next year. We'd love you to come. It's ourselves and Deviant Amps, which is Justin's band, Justin Prescott's band. And my good friend Steve Fulton is also playing. So keep a note of that. I'll be re-announcing the other dates as well. We've got quite a few gigs lined up next year with the Wildfires, but we'd absolutely love you to come to that one anyway. Anyway, more next week, and stay safe. And if you can, chuck something in the tip jar. It'd be really appreciated. You'll get a full free download of that Blue Moon show. And wrap up warm. See you soon.